Good day. It's nice to see so many familiar faces around the room. I have to say, I commented to Mike as he left, it's been a rather long summer, I think that's the right term, for NSAers, so I will aggregate and gather that amount of admiration, amortize it over the last 4 months, take it back to NSA, and I'm sure it'll be appreciated. So in terms of public-private partnerships, Mike talked a lot about the foundational basis for why they're of value. And I wanted to talk a bit today about a central contradiction in terms. And we often look to public-private partnerships and say, I think they're very much viewed in a contradictory way. On the one hand, they're cited as critical, as Mike showed, to improving the nation's cybersecurity, to both improving government's perspective on awareness of what's occurring on private sector networks, and also really improving private sector ability to defend networks. On the other hand, they're frequently criticized as ineffective. And looking around the room, I see a number of folks who've participated in various efforts together, and I think we'd probably say we've been involved in a number of ineffective public-private efforts. So clearly that contradiction is worth thinking through today. So I thought what might be most useful would be sharing our experiences working within three distinct public-private partnership models and the lessons we've learned for what makes a public-private partnership effective or ineffective. I'm really looking forward to your questions and comments on that. So first, and Mike talked a lot about this, why do public-private partnerships matter? So certainly from a government perspective, I think the statistic we use is 85% of the country's critical infrastructure is owned and operated by the private sector. Beyond that, the systems that are within those companies, whether they're utilities, water, et cetera, are built by private sector firms, from networks to routers to individual systems. On the private side, threat intelligence is gathered by private sector entities. I'm sure Kevin noted that earlier today. But there's also, and I suspect as perhaps we all know a bit more, greater over the summer, there's government-gathered threat intelligence. And the sense is that that threat intelligence is often gathered on certain entities, tactics and techniques. And based on the number of times in various groups we talk about the importance of greater government information sharing, there's certainly at least the perspective that that threat intelligence would be useful if shared frequently and at the right value level with the private sector. So we talked about why folks point to and look at the need for greater partnership between the two sectors. But why a partnership specifically? So first, one of the central challenges, I think, economists often point to the central challenge, a number of speakers here have outlined as well, is to a certain extent a degree of shared responsibility, particularly between large critical infrastructure private sector firms and the government. Critical services, as we noted, from power to water, are owned by private sector firms. But it's probably fair to say that the average citizen looks to their government to ensure the resiliency and the continuity of those services. And in addition, it's also fair, and Bob made this point earlier, companies may spend enough to ensure that their networks securely support core business functions, but it's also probably a reasonable sense that they may feel that the ability to really gird networks from catastrophic attack may well be something that is a shared government responsibility. Finally, as we talked about earlier, and perhaps most importantly, as a country and government, I think none of us are prepared today, and the government does not, monitor private sector networks to ensure and in order to maintain, detect, and stop malicious activity. So as a result, if we're saying that there is that shared responsibility, the model of a partnership does seem to be at least an intermediate way to rapidly share threat and vulnerability information. Along those lines, we've talked about, and there's been much discussion in the chamber on that during legislation, there are really two models for government-private sector work, a regulatory model and a partnership model. Given the complexity of setting standards and regulating technology in such a rapidly evolving area, it does seem worthwhile that we kind of take that partnership model as far as it can get us before looking towards a regulatory model. And certainly that was the Chamber's position, and certainly that's the U.S. government's position at this time. So we've established the need for effective partnership. But the question is, can partnership actually work? And as I noted earlier, I think we've probably all participated, looking around the room and having seen some of the individuals who are here, I think we've probably all participated in government-private sector meetings or discussions that haven't quite achieved what everybody hoped for. So I thought it was useful to, as I said earlier, talk through three models, discuss them, what we see they've achieved, what we see their strengths have been, and think through that together. So first, the U.S. government today, at least for those I'm aware of, there may be more, have three models for partnering with the private sector. We'll informally refer to them as follows: general, targeted, and operational. They also reflect very much three different models for partnership in the number of companies who participate, the type of companies who participate, the motivation for it, and what they seek to achieve. So in these, I'm referring to, I'll make a distinction here to the extent I am with the National Security Agency, I'll make a distinction here with the programs that were recently leaked in the media. Those are foreign intelligence programs where U.S. companies are compelled to respond to lawful orders. Those orders are carefully reviewed by appropriate courts and subject to strict oversight from all three branches of government. Instead, what we're referring to here when we talk about partnership are really voluntary cybersecurity-specific information-sharing efforts to support critical infrastructure protection and ensure the U.S. government is sharing threat intelligence with companies. So those three models. The first, general information sharing. It applies to a broad array of private sector entities. It's really focused on sharing threat information. Pretty much any company that wants to participate can. Mostly it's done as one-way sharing from the U.S. government to private sector companies, with in some cases limited anonymized sharing by those private sector participants. The terrific work, for example, the ISACs have done, specifically some individual sector ISACs like the Financial Services ISAC, really speak as good examples in this area. And I suspect, and I will bet, Bobby Stempfli will talk about that in terms of DHS's real accomplishments in those areas. As I noted, the model has the broadest number of companies involved. It's often unclassified threat indicators to sometimes secret level. And as I noted, there's often this interesting side benefit where you'll have intra-sector, within a sector sharing that happens. So independent of the public-private nature of it, by fact of those ISACs existing and by fact of companies across the sector, Mike noted, in any given sector, if one company is targeted, chances are a second one is. That kind of intra-sector building trust and sharing sometimes happens as a natural and even key benefit and key side effect of that type of sharing. So targeted information sharing is the second model, and it focuses on sharing highly specific, often classified, threat information with a small group of companies, often within the technology sector, with a very specific purpose. And the purpose is to mobilize key experts within the technology sector and key experts within the government to actually work to improve the security of those technology products to deal with a threat. So the thought there is that by actually improving the security in hardware and software products, you'll have the natural side benefit of that broad array of companies or consumers who then purchase those products naturally being protected from that threat. And there's a side benefit for companies as well. You know, as we talk about, technology is increasingly complex, and there may often be more vulnerabilities than companies can cost-effectively address. You know, as we've all talked about, many consumers really purchase for functionality, for coolness, for ease of use, vice for security. So government in this way can prioritize the key vulnerabilities that companies can address and often facilitate a cross-sector technology sharing. As I noted, technology, as everybody in this room knows, is increasingly complex. And many of the key vulnerabilities cross sectors. They'll involve linkage between a chipset vulnerability to an operating system vulnerability to an application level vulnerability. Government can bring that together and kind of naturally connect that so those vulnerabilities that exist between those lines are addressed. Such efforts also tie into our discussion of standards a bit later, because one lesson learned we've learned is that improved security in a given area often carries over to standards bodies by both the private and government participants. Finally, the last model, operational public-private partnership. That represents the deepest collaboration between the sectors, and the Enhanced Cybersecurity Services Program, which, again, Mike and Bobby may mention later, which was rolled out in the President's executive order last year, is a primary example of this. In this model, government often shares classified threat intelligence, threat signatures, with private sector communications providers who meet a set of security standards. These companies, force multipliers, if you will, often then incorporate this threat intelligence into other services that they offer, combining the best private sector and government threat intelligence, and then offering that as a for-fee, for-profit service, often to other firms, often to smaller and mid-sized firms who can then benefit from that economy of scale, companies who may not be able to invest in truly building up very strong and rigorous cybersecurity services. So programs like this operational partnership model really bring together government, private sector, threat information that smaller companies can benefit from. So within those three models, there are core differences. And those core differences tie very closely to some of the lessons learned we've had, at least on the government side, working within them. First, there's differences in the objective of the partnership, the goals and degree of expected collaboration, and the types of companies who participate. And in fact, the roles of the private sector participant. We talked in the first model, companies, a broad list of companies who really look for that threat indicator information to protect their own networks. Whereas in the second model, primarily technology sector, you're looking at companies who look to improve the security of their products. And finally, in the third, primarily commercial service providers, companies who are looking to offer a service, threat mitigation, and to really marry up and bring together private sector threat information, government threat information, to more effectively mitigate threats for customers and for pay for customers who essentially pay for the service. So we've learned a set of key lessons across those three models. The first, as I noted, focus on which specific objective you're seeking and ensure that the private sector and government, but certainly private sector participants, are those needed to achieve that objective. As we talked earlier, whether that's any company, any critical infrastructure company wants to receive threat indicators in the first model, to technology companies, primarily those who build software and hardware, to commercial services providers in the last. Second, and this is certainly something Mike referenced, the information the government shares must be valuable. I think sometimes on the government side, whether that's within the intelligence community, with regard to how classified we keep information, and certainly more broadly across government, there needs to be a better effort to ensure that information that we share is fresh. As folks know here, threat signatures often age with time, as there's greater awareness of a particular tactic, as technology companies patch and close vulnerabilities. So we need to ensure that when we're in a partnership, we're ensuring that the information, the threat information that we share truly is distinct, truly is value add. Third, trust is foundational. And the number of participants and degree of trust likely increase in inverse proportion. So for critical infrastructure sectors with active regulatory bodies, some of the ISECs have looked at that, that's often a challenge. So what is the role of a government regulatory body when there is public-private partnership? Clearly defining that role, defining information that's shared within the partnership and how that may be, how that interacts with the regulatory body is important in building that trust. And a fourth and final point, outcomes of public-private partnerships can then inform wider policies. First, legislation. As Mike will note, many of the key points in the executive branch legislation came from lessons learned about the boundaries of what could be accomplished in a partnership and what couldn't be accomplished in a partnership, more importantly. Procurement. Government is often a very large consumer of IT, and there's a lot that we can do to set standards, to set the right security standards so that corporate individuals have a good sense of what we value from a security perspective with greater threat intelligence information and serve to guide. That's obviously a reverse guide as well. And finally, standards. The output of efforts, like the targeted partnership I talked about earlier, are often captured and should be captured in standards to guide the technology sector on that security line that raises all boats in a given technology area. So I'd like to talk a bit more about standards, because they're critical to a nation's cybersecurity strategy. They're critical because they link the purchaser of IT products and the producer in a common framework of a cost-effective and security-effective level in products. Technology is complex. Security comes at a cost. Standards help achieve that correct or that right balance, addressing the level of performance, resiliency required for given usage, in ways that fit within the technology time-to-market cycle. Those of us in government have images of the government-built secure phones we carried even 5 years ago. They were built with a security ideal. And as any of us who used it know, they certainly were an ideal from a usage, a functionality, or even a communication perspective. And indeed, on the government side, that realization that we couldn't really compete in government-built devices, in government-built technology, with the Apples, the Microsofts, even the Blackberries of the world, many of us who carry them, made us realize that we needed to change our procurement of technology to purchase commercial products. And to purchase commercial products, even for those carrying sensitive, classified, and other sensitive information. So as you know, government shifted. We shifted from what we called a goth strategy to a commercial, government-built systems to a commercial strategy, commercial-built systems. Even for national security systems, systems carrying sensitive and classified information. With that came a reliance on the security in those products. And that security is often built on encryption. So one point is important to make clear. NSA relies on the encryption and standards we advocate for, and we advocate for the encryption and standards that we use. Prior to the removal of controls on encryption, on the export of encryption, in the late 90s, and the growth of the web, advanced encryption was not exported, and it was very likely that government use of encryption was different from the average user. But today, citizens around the world are often using the same commercial technology, the same encryption, and the same communications platforms as those who may wish to do harm, from common criminals to those potentially planning transnational threats. Those systems are underpinned by standards for interoperability and for security. NSA uses the encryption and standards we advocate for, and we advocate for the standards and encryption that we use. So what we recommend for inclusion in those cryptographic standards, we use ourselves in protecting classified and unclassified national security systems. We don't make recommendations we can't stand behind for protecting the most sensitive information within the U.S., all the way and up to including the communications of the president. So in conclusion, we've described how public-private partnerships are viewed in a somewhat contradictory way, cited as critical to improving the country's security, cited as largely ineffective. We've talked about some of our key lessons learned. Pick a model, ensure the objectives are clear to both the public and private participants, ensure the set of companies, the type of companies involved, are the right ones to achieve that objective, and run it with rigor. Within the framework of those public-private partnerships, we're just beginning to address what the respective roles of government and private sector are. And we're learning as we go. So if you're not involved in a public-private partnership, you might determine which is the right model and work within that. We know those roles in partnerships, and we know the roles in regulatory models. And we know that we want to exhaust the boundaries of what we can achieve in a voluntary, flexible, and transparent method. So with that, thank you for your time today, and I look forward to your questions.
Great. Thank you, Anne. Does anyone have any questions or comments? We have one back here.
Thank you for your comments there. The one thing, the thread that I've seen throughout today so far is that there's a lot of talk, a lot of legislations, but at the end of the day, how much? The costs. And when you talk risk management, you know, you come back to the classic answer, well, it depends. How much is it worth to you? But when we start looking at fiscal austerity here for the next near future here, we have to start making very tough decisions here. So how much is enough, and then will it ever be enough?
How much security is enough?
Yeah. I mean, when you say private industry is going to pay so much in public-private partnerships, they're going to pay so much to protect their own. But then they expect the U.S. government to pay a fair share, too. But how do you make that, sellable up on the Hill?
So cybersecurity is a risk, like many other risks. Mike talked earlier about insurance. Insurance is often built to a level of risk that a given individual or entity chooses to take. And that security level of risk will often vary by private sector entity, by government entity. Probably as a group, one would think that the level of risk we're willing to take in a utility may well be different from the level of risk willing to take for your local grocery store. So that level of risk is actually what was looked at within the cybersecurity framework that was rolled out in the executive order, and that Pat Gallagher, the director of NIST, will likely speak to in the next forum, because that's the key model that the government is looking to lay out. What is the appropriate level of risk and need for resiliency across those key sectors? What's the framework and perhaps even the set of standards that tie to that level of risk for specific companies within each critical infrastructure sector? And then with that consistency, can you then guide technology firms to know what is valued from a security perspective? Because as many of the companies in the room who actually produce software and hardware will say, if you give us a standard and we know we can meet it once and sell many times, that's an achievable standard, whether that's within a domestic market, whether that's in a global market. And we talked earlier, that's one of the goals, for example, in a public framework like Common Criteria, which tries to link multiple countries with that common standard for security, at least for, in that case, government procurement. Did I answer your question?
We talked earlier this morning, we had a private sector panel, Howard Schmidt moderated, and we had three sectors, energy, retail, and IT. And you've been talking about public-private partnerships and the need for information sharing. And Howard posed the question, you know, did they see any blowback from the Snowden issues and that kind of thing? Do you, you know, my sense is that the public is reacting to this more than sort of our members, our companies, who see the value in information sharing between each other and with the government. Just wondering your thoughts on that. Do you think this is just a blip on the radar, or is this just in the public's mind and not in industry?
So I think partnerships are driven by value. If each side of a partnership values it, then individual participants determine whether it's in the individual's interest to participate in that. So I think that's a very specific decision. Certainly many U.S. companies are global businesses today and look very much to improve the security of their products. They sell the same product in multiple countries around the world. I think from the need for a public-private partnership, that's something that many governments have talked about. I think we've seen a lot of interesting programs, for example, done in the UK, working with their private sector. So from the perspective of, is public-private partnership needed to improve a country's cybersecurity, I think many of the participants would say yes. From the perspective of an individual company, how much a given partnership's value outweighs some of the risks of partnership with any given government, I would imagine that's a company-by-company decision.
Any final questions for Anne? Okay, great job.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate
My pleasure.
As always.